New year, same great savings. All in the Kroger app. Get Kroger Spiral Sliced Ham for 89 cents a pound with your card and an additional $25 purchase limit too. Then get large avocados or mangoes for 99 cents each with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick. We're back for a discussion we probably don't really want to have about the Ravens offense on Sunday against the Eagles. A very tough time with a very big physical Eagles defensive line. Obviously very effective. We're going to get into that in great detail. Joining me to talk about that is Nick Mehta. Nick, how you doing?
You know, could be doing better after that game on Sunday, Ken. You know, I think there was a lot to talk about when it came to the defense that was positive. And unfortunately, on the other side of the ball, there's just not a lot to be happy about. And I think there's going to be a lot of conversations in the castle about this offense moving forward over this bye.
Yeah, very much so. A sputtering offense, a less than efficient day, certainly from Lamar Jackson. The kicking was clearly one of the scapegoats for this game because, hey, it's easy to say that those 7 points would have been just enough to give the Ravens the win and the fallacy of the predetermined play, as John Miller used to call it. But bad field position was a huge issue for the Ravens in this loss, and in particular, a bunch of hidden yards lost on special teams. And two drive starters for the Eagles were in very good field position because of missed Tucker field goals. So that was part of it that was bad. But in addition, got way out punted in the game. Man out punted Stout by about 8 net yards per kick. And there were a lot of punts in this game, 6 for them, 8 or 4 for us. So a really poor game of special teams for the Ravens in terms of getting decent field position to start off or holding the Eagles without it.
Yeah, and I think that was kind of, like you said, the hidden yards. And I think that's really important when you were watching the game, you're kind of wondering, like, why does it feel like the Eagles should be up by so many more points? There were times, I think when it was 14-12, I think it was still 14-12 in the fourth quarter, if I remember correctly. And I was just mystified that the game was still this close because of, obviously, Tucker's missed kicks. But I was surprised that the Ravens actually weren't losing by more. With Tucker's missed kicks, they would be up, and I would have been surprised if they had been winning, but it really felt like they should be down two possessions at that point, just because of the consistent special teams play from the Eagles, the Ravens offense sputtering and giving the Eagles better field position coming back the other way. It felt like the Eagles really won the game. They pulled away in the fourth quarter, but really felt like they won the game before that.
Yeah, they certainly weren't on the field for all that much, which is one of the things that could have made this really ugly game, because the Ravens were manhandled in the trenches on both sides of the ball. The Eagles' offensive line was way too much for the Ravens' defensive line, which is depleted with some injuries. Travis Jones, I don't think, is at full. They had a bunch of other guys who played a high percentage of the snaps, which in this game, fortunately, since they only had 54 offensive snaps, wasn't the end of the world, but it was still probably more than they needed to do. What I can't believe on the other side is that Jalen Carter, I want to say, played all but one snap for the Eagles in a game where they played 71 defensive snaps, which is, let me make sure of that just to be clear.
I have it right in front of me, and you're right.
71 out of 72, yeah.
Very, very impressive. He is the player that he is built to be coming out of Georgia, I think, in a way that Jordan Davis has not been able to live up to his draft billing as kind of this just beast because the technique wasn't there and the longevity wasn't there. But Carter has the technique, and importantly, he can stay on the field for just a ridiculous amount of time, especially when you think about the offense that he's playing against, which is this heavy, and we'll get into some of the issues with the offense in terms of what they pulled out and why they weren't as heavy as they should be, but a heavy rushing attack and running around chasing Lamar Jackson. And you would think that he would somehow need some, a couple snaps off, but and that was while getting double teams pretty much all night by the Ravens offensive line. So, I mean, that's that you draft a guy number 9 overall to be a game wrecker, and that's what he is.
Yep, he was certainly outstanding. And Jordan Davis, you said longevity. I think you mean durability, right? He's not out there for a lot of snaps.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Yes.
Yeah, I completely agree on that. That's been a problem. And that was actually a problem for him at Georgia, that he didn't really play that many total defensive snaps. But so they probably could have predicted it. But he's got that body type that makes you wonder if he can really last that long. Okay. I want to talk a little bit about the playoffs now. The Ravens now are a 2-1 underdog to win the AFC North. Probably need 2 wins in their last 4 games to make the playoffs, which they're in a comfortable position to make the playoffs. They're not at all in a comfortable position in terms of going to or playing, winning the division, certainly, or playing even in decent weather in the playoffs, which is, I think that's actually kind of a big deal for Lamar Jackson.
Yeah, we know he's a Florida boy. And it's clear how much he hates the cold when he is out there on the sidelines and just in the biggest possible jacket you can find. You know, I don't feel like there have been, and I'd have to go through and check, I don't feel like there have been a ton of games that have been particularly cold that he has struggled in the regular season. But certainly I think his playoff losses have typically come in the cold, but that's also because the playoffs are always in the cold. So it's one of those things that is, you know, I think not something I would be thinking about the way this team is playing last year, but the way this team is playing this year, it feels like just another condition that could throw things off for them, that could, you know, just disrupt what little flow they're able to find. And so the playoff seeding is important for that. I mean, certainly these last couple games are going to be cold. And they've got to find a way to push through that on top of all these other issues they are having. So, like I said, I think last year is the kind of factor that I would say they're going to go in and play their game and not worry about it, but they can't even do that right now. And so that's when things like the cold and the opposing team's fans can actually start to make their way in and cause issues where they might not for a team that's just running operating smoothly.
Right. I mean, this loss to the Eagles doesn't create any representation for me about what the team is going forward in a negative way. I mean, I do think they'll have trouble with the Eagles if they have to face them in the Super Bowl. And hey, I hope they do. I mean, that'd be great. But I'm more concerned about playoff football and how much this team in particular needed the home field advantage. Really would have benefited from the number 2 seed as opposed to anything else, because if you don't get the number 2 seed, then you probably have to go to Buffalo. And Buffalo is the nightmare scenario for Lamar. High wind. Normally I would have said that would take away our kicking advantage in any past year, not so anymore. In terms of the play of Lamar, Lamar's had trouble in wind. Lamar had trouble in the playoff game at Buffalo previously, even though the field was clear. He had trouble with the wind there, and that included the Taron Johnson interception. But it was a nasty, windy night there. And in the 2019 loss against Tennessee, wind was whipping like crazy, particularly at the beginning of that game. And the first interception, which was high and tipped by Andrews to Byard, was the start of the end and was wind related. Now Lamar came back and had a good day, but the rest of the offense really did not. And I think it's significant. I think really the Ravens need to be playing very hard to get the number 5 seed right now, and at least try and get to Houston if they can't in fact win the division.
So the cold weather point I pretty much completely agree with. It raises variance in a big way. Cold weather, the wind, snow, I think it raises variance. And like I said, for a team that can't find stability, adding in more variance, it doesn't feel like a good route. But the home field advantage, there's another school of thought that this team needs to maybe go on the road and win a few games on the road and build up some grit. I'm not one of those people.
Me neither.
I think that home field advantage is called home field advantage for a reason. I think that there is certainly always going to be a benefit when you can go in the playoffs and get a win on the road, build confidence into your next game. But there's two problems with that. One, you're probably playing your next game on the road too. And two, you had to go on the road in the first place. So it's a harder win, and you're still probably going on the road anyway. And I just don't think that, again, another factor of variance to introduce into a team that just needs to put together more complete performances. And, I you know, home field advantage, very difficult, like you said, to secure now. But I think that the idea that going on the wild card and, you know, adversity and all that hoorah stuff is just, I just don't think that actually helps.
Yeah, I don't either. And I will say during the early Flacco years from 08 to 12, the Ravens did it all on the road. They did play one home game in 2012, but otherwise it was 100% road games during that stretch. And there was an us versus them quality to that that was fun as a fan to go to those games and to be, you know, have that experience on the road and whatnot. There's also the Ravens of that era with Reed and Lewis leading the team and the defense being the centerpiece of it. It was, I think, also a lot better suited to not be degraded on the road or in cold weather. And I don't see that as being the same case for this team. So anyway, good stuff. But we also had a question on this. I wanted to bring into the thing now. This is from Minion Hunter. Thanks for your regular questions, Minion Hunter. It says, can you please elaborate on what would need to happen for the Chiefs to boot the Ravens from the playoffs in Week 18 with a loss to Denver? Okay, not too hard to explain this. So if the big thing the Ravens need to avoid is any kind of a tie with the Indianapolis Colts, either two-way or three-way. So if they get a two-way tie with the Colts, they lose it based on conference record. And Denver, they beat heads up. And if they as long as they have an equal, you know, they beat in the tiebreaker because of the head-to-head win. So the Chiefs now might end up dropping to the number two seed if they lose a game, say, to the Steelers before Week 18. And they probably will also have the number two seed clinched entering Week 18, presuming they don't lose another game, which that might be too far off to presume that might be true. Or they might have a chance actually. No, they won't have a chance to catch up if they're a game behind. But they could lose a game, or they could lose two games actually, and they could still be stuck in that number two seed. Now they come in and stuck in the number two seed, and you're worrying about who am I playing next week, and you have the chance to lose and project Denver ahead of the Ravens if the Ravens happen to not play particularly well or not outplay Denver the rest of the way. Chiefs might say, great, let's rest Mahomes, let's rest everybody else. They're probably going to do that anyway. We're playing at home. We'd much rather see Denver than we would Baltimore in this game. And I think that would be true no matter what the Ravens struggles or the fact that, what else has happened. The Chiefs have had the Ravens number over the last few years. But I think they still much rather play a rookie quarterback.
Agreed. And I think it's something that's always talked about in these situations when it comes to tanking in the draft, which is, can these men who are conditioned to win do that? And I think it really separates the teams that are able to corral their locker room, their coaching staff into a singular vision and say Super Bowl. That's what we're getting. If we need to, and look, we're resting Mahomes. It's not like we're just going to forfeit the game. We're just protecting our star quarterback from potentially getting hurt, especially if, like you're mentioning, they don't have a bye and they're playing the next week anyway. So it's not like they're going to have a long gap. That's why I think the Chiefs would do it, because the Chiefs, Veach, Reed on down, Hunt on down, from ownership on down, that team is driven by vision. I think that is the reason.
So they would tank is when you say they would do it.
Yes. I think that they would. And I think because you also have it's the very easy reason of we're resting Mahomes, we're resting our starters, because for once we're actually playing next week. We don't have the first round seed like they've had a number of, they don't have the first round bye like they've had a number of times in the Mahomes era. And that's what separates these organizations, I think, from others, because I think that's one thing that the Chiefs do is that they try to win the Super Bowl every year. And that's why they're competing for their third in a row, because they don't get caught up in regular season point differential awards. They might get those along the way, but they really have just marshaled their forces towards one singular goal. It's something that every team should take notes on, quite frankly.
All right, let's move forward here. But one thing that comes out of this very clear, Minyan Hunter, is that they can't depend on help in Week 18 games. The Ravens have to do it themselves. And if they did once miraculously in 2016, back into the playoffs, right? 2016 is that? This might not be the year. It might have been 2014 when Kansas or San Diego helped them out by losing the final game of the year, and they backed into the playoffs that way. But generally speaking, if you're looking for help in Week 18, you're probably not going to get it, because the motivated teams win and the unmotivated teams lose, and that includes some very good teams. And then in this case, you actually could have a situation where the Chiefs are highly motivated to lose the game, and they will find a way to do it if they're as motivated there. This is a bye week we're obviously coming up on here, and this is a get well week for the Ravens. It's probably more serious for the defense, and we went over a lot of that yesterday on the defensive show, which is already out, folks. So go take a listen to that if you'd like to. But the Ravens now have a very serious injury with Rashad Bateman and may need another tight end to replace Kolar, from what I saw in this game. The Kolar injury is not going to fix itself over these 2 weeks. The Bateman injury, I haven't heard yet what the prognosis is. You're on mute.
Harbaugh, I don't think anyone has come out and given any prognosis on Bateman's knee injury. He said it was just too sore to return to the game, which you hope means it isn't severe. If it is, that is a huge, huge loss for the offense. Not just Bateman, but you're also losing him within a week of losing Charlie Kolar. And like you said, we saw what impact that had on the offense and, Monken's ability to, scheme up successful run wins. Open up lanes without Charlie Kolar became an issue, which is not something I thought we'd be saying at the beginning of the season. So, the tight ends out there, they re-signed Scotty Washington to their practice squad. He's probably, their preferred option since he's been around the team for a couple years. But Bateman would be obviously a much, much bigger issue, especially with Deontay Johnson not playing a single snap. And that was mystifying. It was, in my opinion, pretty egregious of him to not play a single snap, whether really no matter what the reason is.
Who are you terming as egregious in with that? Are you terming Harbaugh, Monken, or Johnson himself?
So that's the thing, is I don't know why. No one knows why he didn't play. And Harbaugh has been so cryptic about it since. So there, and Jackson said he'd speak to him. So there's something up, right? So if Johnson's refusing to play after Bateman gets injured, that's obviously egregious. The opportunity that he has seemingly, been waiting for is right there for him to go and take. But if Monken knew that, why was he active in the first place? If Harbaugh knew that, why was he active in the first place? Or why have, after a month of Deontay Johnson being in Baltimore, have you not been able to get him up to speed on the offense enough to have him in games as a veteran wide receiver who averaged 50 yards a game with the Panthers to start the year, alternate between Andy Dalton and Bryce Young as his QB? So to me, it's just, there is something very wrong here. I think that the team beat reporters are going to be pressing Harbaugh for answers. He didn't have any, I think, in his Monday presser, but clearly to me, something's up.
If you read between the lines, and when Harbaugh says, "I don't have anything to say about that right now," that's a very negative thing. If it was, look, I liked what these two receivers, meaning Wallace and Aguilar, were giving us during this game, and they both played 40 snaps. They've been big contributors all year, and they've each done some positive things for this team, particularly over the last 2 years. We just didn't have a spot to get Johnson in the game, but Johnson's a professional. I'm sure he'll be around, and with Bateman's injury, we're going to have to figure out how to get him in on more packages this next week. We would have heard words like that. We didn't hear words like that. We heard, "I don't have anything to say about that right now." Okay. And I might be have the wrong rates, the words slightly wrong, but that's completely the saltiness and terseness of that response. That tells you there's something wrong. And it is probably some sort of a communication issue, diva issue, practice habits issue, a work ethic issue. He may have had a crappy excuse for being late for a meeting. You know, the old, I had to wash my car that we heard from Earl Thomas years ago that got him basically, it was the beginning of the end for him, was missing a meeting for that. I mean, Johnson is, there's something very wrong. And when I put that together with the fact that he's not a very good receiver, he said 6.8 yards per target career with Pittsburgh. Some crappy quarterbacks, but 6.8 yards per target is terrible. He had 6.2 at Carolina. Again, some even worse quarterbacks, that's still very bad. You know, even if he's the guy. There's a lot of people out there who want to pull on what his traits are as a receiver and say, look at his release package. You know, he's the ultimate man beater and he's better than anybody the Ravens have, including Zay Flowers. You know, I mean, all that stuff is crap. I mean, it really is. It's utter complete crap. His on-the-field production has really sucked. And the fact that the Ravens didn't get him in the game, I mean, part of what I think is happening here is that Harbaugh will not make allowances for his lousy behavior because he's not a good player. I think it's a double-edged problem here.
Yes. I think, and this is why I was saying there's kind of these, all these different factors involved, because if you're refusing to put him on the field because of his behaviors, I don't want to litigate the John Harbaugh doghouse. People have differing thoughts on that. But if that's the reason, fine. We know John Harbaugh. If that's the reason, we can accept that. Why is he active?
Deactivate him. Okay, I can go along with that. And then you're going to activate Walker over him.
You're going to activate Walker. But this is why I'm so frustrated about it. Because no matter what the case, I think the coaching staff has clearly made a mistake, at least one mistake of some sort, because they maybe haven't been able to get a rookie up to speed in seven months with the team, or they're not able to get a veteran wide receiver up to speed, or they're refusing to play the veteran wide receiver because of personal things, but they won't deactivate him because they don't have the rookie ready enough. If you see what I'm saying, it's...
Well, the fourth thing would be, or the veteran wide receiver really isn't any good and he's got bad habits, and so we should be deactivating him. But I do agree with you.
And then again, you haven't gotten Walker ready. Right. Yeah. Yes, you should be activating him. And I think, you know, it is somewhat of an indictment on the coaching staff that you can't deactivate him because you can't, you know, you don't trust Walker on offense yet. The guy was drafted in the fourth round. I think we've seen a lot of in the era of really probably Eric DaCosta drafting receivers, the number of, you know, early day three guys, late day two guys that just don't get a chance for very, very long. And we're seeing with Tylan Wallace now, like every time he gets targeted, almost every time he delivers, he steps up when he's called upon as a wide receiver. And you know, I worry that, you know, part of the development issue is that these guys aren't getting live reps in games early enough in their careers, especially, look, this is a case where Bateman got hurt. And if you weren't going to put Johnson in, then maybe you actually have a chance to put Walker in and at least get him out there. With how stagnant the offense was, I think there's an argument that, you know, it couldn't look much worse than it did at times. So, you know, get a guy out there. And get him some reps and work on that development, which I think has been a weakness of the team for quite a few years.
They've got it at the bottom of the roster. They have several guys. It's true at the bottom of the game day roster. It's true at the bottom of the roster now. They have several guys they could cut. And they don't need both Rasheen Ali and Keaton Mitchell on the team, I don't believe. There may have been an injury issue with Keaton this week that caused Ali to be up. But, you know, whatever the case, they don't need both of those backs on the team. Tez Walker, if they're not going to play him, then they could IR him and just end the season right now, because my guess is he's probably not gaining a lot from practice. You know, you and I were both at camp. One thing I'll say is that the Walker did not have outstanding physicality and he had some fragility issues. So when I see him getting beaten up by, it was Christian Mathieu, the number 45, the cornerback, mm-hmm. who was just beating the crap out of him during some of those early practices. I mean, there were unpadded practices. I thought a lot of the contact was completely unwarranted for even an in-team padded practice. I thought it was too much. But also, Walker didn't really stand up to that kind of a beating particularly well, and that did cost him snaps on the field, cost him reps on the field. But I'm in complete agreement with you on the fact that Deontay Johnson shouldn't be active. The Ravens' risk on him was not so great that they can't say we made the wrong move. We're deactivating him, or maybe even we're releasing him. If you really got this big a problem, you're never going to activate him. Well, they have spots lower down on the roster they can get rid of first, but you at some point you can just release him. And this is very similar to the Marcus Williams situation, where Marcus Williams could play special teams, but he doesn't. Deontay Johnson, same thing. And he doesn't play special teams. Either one of them could play. And then Williams comes in for one snap in each of two consecutive games before he's finally shuffled off to inactive. And it's just to me, they are very similar situations, but I agree with you, either activate him or, if he's going to be active, you better play him.
Yeah. And I think the frustration with multiple of these issues popping up is what's going on in the locker room? Why is this truly a player's diva thing? Is it something right. within the team? Is it with the coaching staff? And, you know, these are distractions, right? These take us away from the football and take the team away from the football.
Now, they're distractions for us as fans because we're pissed off. We say Deontay Johnson is acquired. Why isn't he playing? The organization has two choices in this matter. And they can say, okay, we're gonna create the clearest possible signal to everyone out there as to why Deontay Johnson is not playing by having him inactive. And I'll even make a statement. And Harbaugh's case say, look, Deontay is working through some personal issues and he's trying to, and when I say personal, I mean in terms of his comportment as a teammate on the Baltimore Ravens. We want him to fix these. We want him to be part of our offense going forward. But at this point, he's not there and he's inactive. They could do that. Okay. Or they could do the thing the Ravens always do, which is basically keep these problems under wraps, which frustrates people like you and me who are fans of the team and want to know and don't have a good explanation, but the players understand why Deontay Johnson is not playing. Every other person on that 53-man roster, other than Johnson, understands why he's not playing.
Yeah, and I think it is the team's MO to keep things under wraps. I think it's easier to do with Williams when he was just clearly playing so poorly, yeah. and there was reason for him to not be playing. You don't really need him on special teams. You could play special teams, but you might prefer to keep a Kane active on special teams over Williams if it's only a special teams role he's going to play, injuries aside. But with Johnson, it's much more glaring that there is some kind of personal thing, because it's not just he was playing really poorly. He hasn't gotten a chance to play poorly. So
he has played poorly in the amount of he's played. He's had five targets and had 6 yards, and he's fallen down twice on routes. He hasn't looked good. I can't point to that and say everything's hunky dory in terms of his play on the field. Everything is not hunky dory in terms of his limited snaps on the field.
Yeah. That's true. I guess I should say he probably hasn't earned more snaps on the field, but I also think when Bateman went down, there's really no good reason not have a guy who, you know, has somewhat of a proven track record in the NFL. He's not, I agree. He's not, he was once a 1,000-yard receiver and Pro Bowler. And I think that has really colored people's perception of him for mm-hmm. the rest of his career. Since then, he has never come close to re-hitting those highs. But in terms of just being able to generally function as a receiver, he has been able to do that in the NFL, and he has not been able to do that, like you say, in his stint with the Ravens so far. He's never anything spectacular. He had that one great season that also came on 169 targets. So I would hope you get 1,000 yards on 169 targets.
You better.
And
that's 6 yards per target, by the way, folks, if you
right. And so we're, But and so pre-Eagles game, everyone's like, okay, hopefully he gets in there, but no one's really clamoring to come in and mix up this offense that, you know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And now not only is this offense stuttering, but Bateman got hurt. We don't know for how long, but if it's an extended absence, the answer certainly isn't going to be Deontay Johnson. And like I said, to me, it really just comes back to coaching, that this situation was able to kind of start and proliferate into what it is, both on the side of, you know, Deontay personality, I guess in all three realms, I guess, both Deontay personality, Deontay's ability, just getting Deontay coached up and into the offense, and also not getting your rookie coached up and giving him a chance to contribute rookie year when this veteran that you acquired isn't doing anything. So I think that's probably the end of my rant on that.
They've got 2 weeks to get Walker ramped up. They've also got 2 weeks to mend the bridge with Deontay if that's the way they want to go. So we could see, but we're going to know in that Giants game whether or not Deontay Johnson is in the Ravens' plans for the rest of the season. The need is there, undeniably. So the question is he really part of it? I've been basically, you know, backing the notion that Deontay is a insurance policy for the loss of Bateman, that was part of it. He's not as good as either Bateman or Flowers. There's just no question about that. But he was still an insurance policy that they got pretty cheap just in case they had a big injury. Now they have a big injury. If Bateman isn't back for that Giants game, boy, we're going to find out immediately. The rubber's going to hit the road on whether or not Deontay Johnson is really part of the plans going forward.
Yeah, I think an hour before the game, we'll know. The inactives come out. If he's on it, and well, I mean, when we could know before that if they make some roster moves, but if Johnson's on the inactives list, then we know it's pretty much done for him. If he's active and Bateman isn't playing,
series,
then I guess we have to wait until the first, you know, the first few series, the first quarter to see. But it is disappointing. I think I would understand Deontay Johnson's frustration about, you know, getting traded, you know, to a contender away from, you know, a team where you can just rack up numbers on volume, which is pretty much what he's done his whole career, which is just rack up yards on a high volume of targets. And you get traded to, yeah, Super Bowl contender, but you're learning the offense. You're way down on the depth chart. You're coming in. The train's already moving. It's hard to catch on. I get the frustrations. I do think that going from Bryce Young / Andy Dalton to Lamar Jackson is a pretty appreciable upgrade. And to me, and again, I think this is our perspective as fans, but you are playing football for a living. You get to play with Lamar Jackson on a team that has Super Bowl at least aspirations. There are worse things, you know, that could be happening in your career than this, quite frankly. You could have gotten traded to somewhere much worse, like a team barely making the playoffs or something like that. So I don't know.
You're saying like playing 20% of the snaps with Lamar Jackson was still a highly preferable situation than playing 80% of the snaps somewhere else like Carolina.
Well, I think that's the thing is, It Johnson must not think that way. That's really the only thing I can come up with, is that Johnson is focused on, and again, this is why I'm saying I do understand where he's coming from, which is he's focused on his paycheck. He's focused on his contract. This is a contract year. He's going to be a free agent again. He was averaging 50 yards a game with the Panthers. His agent could wave that around in the face of a bunch of teams and say, look at what he did with this, you know, terrible offense, bad quarterback. Imagine what he could do for you. And instead of getting to fill up that volume over a whole season, he's now stuck in this minor, if any, role in Baltimore. That's going to make, you know, his free agency tougher. Now, that being said, if he would, you know, maybe comport himself the way Harbaugh wants and get himself together and work harder to get integrated into the offense and become a role player on a playoff team, that might look pretty good in free agency too. But, you know, again, this is I think where the fan athlete perspective kind of clashes, because it's really hard to put really hard to actually put yourselves in the mind frame of the guys in the locker room like that.
Okay, so I the mind frame of Deontay Johnson, I'm not even going to try and put myself in that mind frame. You've done a pretty good job of it, I think, in terms of saying his contract's very important to him. I'm at a point where I'm losing sympathy such that I don't really want to put myself in that headspace. Okay. But I do know that the Ravens have handled it the way in which they most typically handle things when they're not ready to completely give up. When they're ready to completely give up, you get the Tim Williams kind of saltiness that you know, or the stuff before the very end, you know, some of the backing up Chuck Clark after the fight with Earl Thomas kind of thing. We're not at that point yet, I don't think, with Deontay Johnson. There's 2 weeks here. Maybe they'll figure out how to bridge this gap. But I think my guess from dealing with all the things and seeing the way that the Ravens keeps things internally, it's a maturity issue with Johnson. There's at least a part of this. And there may also be a productivity issue with Johnson. And the other stuff about getting ready to play, I think that's an issue for Wallace. I don't think it should be an issue for Johnson. I think Johnson, yeah, he's coming to a new offense. So what? He's basically a man-beating wide receiver who wants to get to a spot on the field after making the opposing defensive back make the wrong move at the top of the stem. That's a fairly basic characteristic that you want in any receiver. Now, Jackson's not ideally suited to take advantage of those traits. So, you know, he has to wait kind of to see the route develop. But Johnson still has the ability to create separation in that way. If the Ravens can find a way to do it, I bet they will. I think that part of the problem is Johnson is not the receiver that every other Ravens fan who loves every wide receiver, every name wide receiver, seems to think he is. He's not that good.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I'm not sure if we've talked about Tylan Wallace before, but I have been on Tylan Wallace Island for, you know, a couple years now after seeing his ability to just convert opportunities and do the most with his opportunities. And so when Bateman got injured, my mind actually didn't go to Johnson. I really actually did not notice until after the game somehow that Johnson would play a snap, because my mind immediately went to let's get Tylan Wallace more involved. And they did a little bit. I mean, he caught both of his targets. Aguilar couldn't reel in either of his. But to me, the whole thing with Deontay Johnson is, okay, that is – I'm trying to put that out of my mind now, and whatever the team says about that, they're going to say about that. However that's going to progress, it will. Instead, maybe it's more of an opportunity for Tylan Wallace with Bateman out.
All right, fair enough. We need to move on. Great discussion, by the way. Appreciate having you for that. Efficiency of the Ravens offense way off in this game, 2 of 5 in the red zone. That was a kind of an underappreciated reason why the Ravens didn't get this done. One of their successes, they were 1 of 4 until the last 10 seconds of the game when they got the pass to Likely for the touchdown. 5.3 yards per play passing. The Ravens haven't had one of these all year, and Lamar was actually significantly under his opportunity set in this game. So not an efficient offense, and I think you have to really give credit where credit's due. Fangio and the defensive line were extremely effective with a 4-man rush. Mm-hmm. We're going to get to that in some detail later. But also, Jackson had a lot of trouble throwing into the back seven. It was not an easy game. The Eagles secondary is fairly talented. They have other talented linebacker as well, in particular Zach Bond, who played a great game in this one, mm-hmm. who – you know, gave Jackson all sorts of trouble in this game.
Yeah, and the Eagles are still down Darius Slay. So again, I think it speaks to coaching. It speaks to Fangio and how that scheme is dialed up. And it really forces a quarterback to, I think, be patient, which is tough to do when you're getting pressured and you got to get on the run and get rid of the ball. You gotta mention those rookie cornerbacks. Quinyon Mitchell and Cooper DeJean. I was really high on DeJean during the draft process. Just
new year, same great savings. All in the Kroger app. Get Kroger spiral sliced ham for 89 cents a pound with your card and an additional $25 purchase limit too. Then get large avocados or mangoes for 99 cents each with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details. At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.
Because of exactly what you saw, on Sunday afternoon, Sunday evening, his ability to play in the slot, work in man coverage, zone coverage, run defense, really be a complete slot corner, is a complete slot corner who actually elevates the rest of your defense, is exactly what you saw in him. And it was disappointing. Obviously Slay's out and then Bateman goes down. So you kind of lose the advantage that you might have had there very quickly. And I think that, you know, Bateman didn't see a single target on his 18 snaps either. So I think that was, you know, you said missed opportunities. And I think that is really what summed up this game.
Any buyer's remorse on Nate Wiggins after seeing Cooper DeJean play? And he's obviously having a very big year. He's under 5 yards per target right now for the Eagles. Been targeted 52 times, so not a minimal amount, with 250 yards exactly in receiving.
So I'll keep this as quick as I can. I when the Ravens were on the clock, I wanted them to take Cooper DeJean. I was really excited that he was there because I felt like you basically could have another very versatile inside outside slot player. DeJean even might have the instincts to drop back into some deeper zones. And then you have him, Hamilton, and Marlon Humphrey in that secondary. And there's just so much you can do from there. I don't really have buyer's remorse on Wiggins, 'cause I think he's just going to be, I think he's going to be very good. I think we're already seeing kind of the flashes of what he could be. And I think it's all about, he's very young and he needs a little bit more time to kind of just develop and get better at playing the NFL game. 'Cause he's drafted, he's 20 years old. So I don't think I have buyer's remorse on Wiggins, because I also see kind of the point of getting a guy that you envision as someday being able to just put him out there and lock down, which is not really something the Ravens have had the last couple of years, which is a true lockdown corner. Humphrey has been hurt and he's been playing on the inside this year. He's been playing fantastic, but I'm not sure I quite call him like the lockdown island style cornerback that Wiggins could be. But that being said, I think, you know, DeJean showed why he was so well regarded and why Howie Roseman got so much praise for taking him in the second round there, because you know, he certainly does not have all of the qualities that Kyle Hamilton has, but his versatility is an example of, or I guess his versatility lets you do a lot of the same things in your defense that teams can do with Kyle Hamilton. It lets you, you know, it just lets you do a lot more.
Okay. We need to keep moving on here. Talk about other players on offense here. First home loss for Jackson ever in December here. We did have the concern about poor weather we mentioned earlier. That really hasn't affected him too much, obviously, during the regular season here. And they played some very cold games here, although he has not been the quarterback in all of them, because in 21 and 22, he was out in December. So it was Snoop who actually got him through that Atlanta game and got him the win they needed for the playoffs. Ravens forced 15 missed tackles in this game, 11 rushing and 4 by receivers. It's a very high missed tackle rate relative to what the Eagles have normally done. That part of the game came back after a week off from the Ravens in terms of forcing missed tackles.
Yeah, and the other note I saw you had here is that only 45% of the passing yards were after the catch, which is below their season average of 52. You know, the Eagles are very much a close and tackle kind of defense. They want their guys flying to the ball. And, you know, the Ravens were able to, you know, force missed tackles, but like you said, most of those were on the ground. Very few of those were after the catch. It was just very, very solid tackling from the Eagles after the catch. And I think that when, you know, you take that element of the Ravens offensive way, that's when Lamar really tries to start pushing the ball down the field into coverage, into, you know, double, triple coverage more often because he feels like he's not going to get the yards after the catch and he needs to move the chains or, you know, score on that drive because it's the fourth quarter. I felt like it was an area where Monken did not have very much schemed up in terms of Yak. I feel like he typically has more plays that scheme Flowers or even Isaiah Likely into space. And I just feel like we didn't see much of that.
So, they certainly had Flowers in space by the left sideline. He juked several times, did make some people kind of stutter, but the problem was there were too many Eagles there to not corral him. But yeah, I would agree. Well, didn't have as many crossing opportunities in this game, which is really what you're looking for, I think, or even slant opportunities where you take it, take it at 5 yards and go. The other thing they didn't do is throw the ball behind the line of scrimmage very much in this game. So that's where you have a high percentage of total yards coming Yak. Usually, in fact, often your Yak is greater than your yards on such throw. In fact, if you got a negative, I guess that's by definition. But I don't look at it as a terrible number, and it's only 7% off their season average. So we're not talking about a big difference. Maybe 14 more yards, 15 more yards, 16 more yards. It would have been.
Against an Eagles defense that focuses on 7-man coverages and limiting deep balls, Yak, we kind of knew coming into this game, managing to get yards after the catch was going to be important, and that's what I meant
and in terms hard. Of
yes, 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 and in terms of schemed up Yak, that's kind of what I was referring to in terms of screens, the RPO game. Just things that get your ball carriers into space. Because like you said, Flowers can get the separation and make the catch. But if it's not schemed in such a way where he has blockers after the catch or he's moving into an open area of the field, then this defense is going to surround and bring him down. I mean, I think the play you're talking about, it looked like something out of like a slow motion drama of like a movie where, he gets away from one guy, another one pops up right there, and you can't even enjoy the juke because he's having to dance away again and just can't pick up any yards.
Yeah. All right, let's move on, talk a little bit about Lamar in this game. He was sacked 3 times in 39 dropbacks, actually 4 because one was called back for a penalty, a defensive hold unrelated. So it's another long in the list of bad events for the offensive line in this game was the results of that play. He ran the Ravens out of 4, and the offensive line will say, call it, out of 4 pressures in this game, which was nice. He hadn't done, the last time he did as many was in week 1 against the Chiefs when he ran him out of 7 in that game. So this is a fairly outstanding game for that. What I will say is the Eagles used almost as vanilla a pass rush as the Ravens did. They used 32 plays with 4-man rush and 7 with a 5-man rush, nothing else. All right, so they were perfectly comfortable to sit back, and particularly in the fourth quarter of that game when they got the lead and they took a 9-point lead with Barkley in particular, that they were very happy to just sit back and rush 4 every single play.
Yeah, and that's been the Eagles' MO all year, which is why I found it a little alarming that the Ravens just weren't able to handle the pass rush or solve the coverages, right? If they were doing one or the other, if they were solving the coverages and able to get open downfield and Lamar was able to get the ball out, that would be great. If, they were able to just give Lamar all the time he needed for someone to finally shake loose, that would be great. But they really could not do either on a consistent basis. The usual synergy you see between Jackson and his receivers on improvised plays was not there nearly as often. I think there was that one big connection to Flowers that I believe was in the first half. And then if I remember correctly, not a ton of other backyard ball, which is really the X factor that Jackson can bring against a team like the Eagles, which is when you get that much time behind the pocket, actually being able to find a connection downfield. But it wasn't on today, especially because Eagles were really focused on Zay Flowers on those plays after he burned them the first time. Bateman is out, and then you are left with Andrews and Likely, who weren't always out running routes. They were occasionally blocking, and then Wallace and Aguilar, who he just doesn't have the same connection with because of playing time. It was they I mean, like you said earlier, really credit to the Eagles defense. I mean, they really did a number on Jackson's specific skill set in this game, I felt like.
But Jackson also missed some opportunities to run. And I think he talked about how his mom was on him for that. But he's joking, and obviously what's going on is just kind of funny. Oh, his mom might have actually said it. But it wasn't there were more opportunities to run. And when you face a team that has a four-man rush and you can get those edge players in particular, they're very aggressive edges. Both Nolan Smith is, and Sweat is, who Sweat had an unbelievably great game. There are guys you can push, you can try and block 12 to 6. They'll try and beat you outside play after play after play if they think they can get you there. You can get them 12 to 6, which means you're going to open up lanes for Jackson to take off. And then somebody's got to figure out how to get him down. So I think there were missed opportunities there. He had a lot of time to throw in this game. Usually one of the things to look for, time to throw isn't always a great statistic for measuring different types of quarterbacks. Long time to throw on a stationary quarterback is very bad, but a long time to throw on Lamar Jackson usually means opportunity. And specifically in terms of Lamar Jackson, opportunity to run is a big component of that. Even though the runs are not included, I don't believe, in these time to throw numbers. So if you see a high number, that means he's having a lot of time, survey the field, pick a gap, take off, and he should have some, should certainly get some yardage from that. But, honestly, the opportunity set for Lamar was not that terrible in this game. A lot of it was just Lamar had trouble solving the 7-man coverages of the Eagles.
Yeah. And when he was able to, I think maybe there were times where he was able to, less that he found a way to solve the coverages and more that he just started to make, honestly, some pretty spectacular throws. There were a handful, I think, of underappreciated throws in that game. There's one that got kind of a clip that got circulated with him ignoring Bateman on a drag in the first quarter, and he went for Andrews close to the pylon. Really a spectacular throw to Andrews that, Andrews had a shot at, no other player could have touched. Obviously, the pass to Flowers, and then both of the passes to Nelson Agholor were inches perfect. And I think that, there was a point where Lamar just said, well, you know what? I have this arm. I'm going to get these passes in there. Maybe I can't break down the coverages, but if I make a perfect pass, it can be a catch, because perfect offense beats perfect defense. And so if he can make a perfect pitch and catch, then that's really what he gave Agholor the opportunity to do it there in the fourth quarter. So this is one of those games to me where Jackson almost defies conventional grading. How do you grade a player that puts, this kind of a game together? He's dealing with this offensive line. His, number two receiver goes down. It's just one of the ways I think he's a very interesting player to watch. I think there's obviously plenty of room for criticism for his performance, the opportunities to run. I do think he gets some laser vision downfield sometimes, but also made some of his really good plays.
Vision, right? You mean he's like on a, yes. He's on a specific receiver and he stays there. Yeah.
Tunnel vision. And he gets laser focus is what I was thinking on one target. But you also saw some of the things that make him one of the most special football players in the league. So there are plenty of times where I'm watching Lamar Jackson and I can't do anything but laugh.
Yeah. I mean, it's been a great season for miraculous Lamar plays. Certainly in this game, had actually pretty decent opportunity set, and it does not completely fit with what you're going to hear from offensive line scoring in the second half of the show, because it's weird, but he had 13 ample time and space opportunities. That's 39%. You can live with that. You could have that every time, you'd be happy. But only 6 of 13 were complete for 79 yards. So those ample time and space opportunities only get in 6.1 yards per throw. He should be 8.5 or higher. I mean, Lamar Jackson overall is up near over 8 yards per throw overall. So wouldn't be any reason for him to be at 6.1 on ample time and space opportunities. So that was a bummer. 11 ball out quick opportunities, 30% of the time. He went 10 of 11 on those, which is good, but only 43 yards, 3.9 yards per play. So the Eagles are very good at coming downhill after the play on those. And then 15 pressure opportunities, 30%. We've seen numbers like this from the Ravens defense at time this year when they're not getting enough pressure and they might have just slightly more pressure than ample time and space. This was one of those games, 15 pressures and 13 ATS opportunities, where they just had a little bit more pressure than ATS. But he completed just 8 of 12 for 84 yards on those plays. Was 5.6 yards per play. Most of that was on the 40-yard pass to Flowers early in the game. They also had 3 sacks on that. So a lot of variance in there. Variance, as you, if you know you listen to this show, accrues to the defense in terms of value. You don't want to have variance if you're on offense.
Right. And this game, I felt like the intangible elements of this game, like, you know, what impact does the missed kick have on the offense the next time they have to go back out there and they're facing a third down? They're thinking, we got to get this or else we might not score on this drive. It's, you know, those things start to add up. And I feel like, again, those intangible factors, again, introduce more variance. And like you said, favors the defense. And this team, especially not being able to get settled or in a rhythm, which I feel like is a narrative thing that's talked about in offense a lot. Oh, they don't look like they're in a rhythm. But I think with the Ravens, there's no flow to the game. They're not consistently picking up yards on designed plays. And when it's all improvised yard, when your big play every drive is improvised, then your drives don't really feel like they're stacking up into, you know, you're building, you're scoring and you're building a lead. It just feels like you're kind of backyard footballing your way to, you know, as many yards as you can rack up on a single play. And to me, I think that's, again, where the variance comes in, because that's such a high variance strategy.
Yeah. I mean, if the downside is sacks and penalties, which unfortunately the penalties in particular have been a problem every game before this one, and the sacks were a problem this game, then that's often the case. But yeah, you have that problem. And honestly, the biggest issue for the Ravens in terms of variation allowed on offense has not been in the passing game. It's been on the running game, because they've given up a ton of offensive holding penalties, or been flagged a ton for offensive holding on run plays. That's normally the case. They do happen on pass plays, but it's much more frequent on a run play. And that's stalled a bunch of drives. So, you know, while we've had a great yards per carry year from Derrick Henry with lots of big plays, and some from Jackson as well, it's really dragged the offense down to have all those penalties occur on run plays.
Agreed. And I think that combined with the feeling that you're kind of hunting for a knockout blow with Henry too often. Some of like the toss play calls feel like they're hunting for a big play instead of just finding ways to grind out yards against on the ground against the team that runs the highest percentage of light boxes in the league. And instead of coming out with a heavy attack and forcing the Chiefs forcing the Eagles to match. And this is what they did the Commanders. This is what they did to the Chargers. Two teams that run a lot of nickel, run a lot of light boxes. And they came out with heavy personnel and they basically battered them into submission and dragged them into the mud and said, you're going to come play our game. They were unable to exert that force upon the Eagles' defensive line. I think that's partially because, you know, they lost Charlie Kolar and they did not bump up Ricard's snaps in response to that. And as a result, you weren't able to dictate, you weren't able to set the tone. Combine that with, you know, a pretty poor run blocking game from Patrick McCary and Daniel Falele in particular. And the element of your offense that's supposed to be the consistent one grinding out yards, especially against a team that runs so many light boxes, is not doing that. And then, you know, we've talked about the struggles they had in the passing game. So it just neither running the ball nor throwing the ball was really on.
The Eagles defensive line, just to talk about another way in which they dominated the game, the ground game in particular, they morphed the line of scrimmage to their own will. And, you know, you understand how that affects the passing game, because, you know, you don't want to have front side pressure. You don't want to have pressure from anywhere, basically. You want to be able to step into that throw, have your time. They didn't even allow for easy pulls for the Ravens in this game. There was too much penetration into the backfield on a play-by-play basis right off the snap from Carter and Davis in particular, but also from Milton Williams. Milton Williams had a great game.
Yes.
And, you know, it's not like these guys are pikers or anything, but you have to do more than what the Ravens accomplished at the line of scrimmage. And it made everything difficult, made zone blocking very difficult against this team. You saw them going right and play after play. I'm trying to score these linemen who can't seem to get lined up at all with an opponent on the play. They either get their face crossed or they go in front of the player and he throws them forward and he's all of a sudden through. And things did not work for the Ravens on the ground in a number of ways. Prodigious number of missed blocks for the offensive line in this game. And some of them were in level two. Zach Bond was too quick for everybody. So that was a general problem. But there were a whole bunch at the line of scrimmage as well. And it wasn't just people getting pulled back and losing ground in the passing game. It was a lot on the run plays as well. So ugly, ugly game for this offensive line.
Yeah, I mean, 81 of Henry's 82 yards came after contact. Stats, which is just I had to go back and like kind of rewatch the game, you know, with that in mind to really figure out if that was a mistake. But he was just contacted at or behind the line of scrimmage so many times it's still going to slow his ability. It's still going to slow him down. It takes away his ability to really build up that head of steam that is so dangerous with, you know, a guy that's 250 pounds. When you're able to contact him behind the line of scrimmage, make him move more laterally. You know, those are the ways that you beat Derrick Henry. And it starts with, like you said, just dominating that offensive line, getting penetration every play, not letting them run the kind of plays that they want to run, zone or gap. They didn't let the Ravens run the kind of plays they wanted to run.
That's an interesting thing. 81 out of 82 yards after contact doesn't mean that he wasn't occasionally touched in level two for the first time on some percentage of the plays. He might've been touched 2 yards past the line of scrimmage five or six times during the game, but he's touched at -3 or -4 on some plays. And so those are offsetting that, but you do see that come up on screen pass yak a lot too, is that sometimes a receiver for a whole season, and it's almost always a running back of the Ray Rice variety, will have more yards after catch than he has receiving yards.
Correct. Yeah. And, you know, but one of the things that's been really major with Henry this year is that he wasn't getting solid yards before contact in Tennessee. And this year he has his highest yards before contact per attempt of his career in Baltimore. And that was nowhere to be found on Sunday.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you're right about that, but it's a big improvement from last year anyway, where his yards before contact was terrible. Let's move on. We got a few more scheme things to hit before we close down part one of the show here. The running back snap division between Hill and Henry was not much difference than normal. 36-37, one pony backfield, zero for Ali. So Harbaugh was asked about Ali or Keaton Mitchell being active, and he said, gave a kind of vague answer about, you know, giving Keaton Mitchell an extra week off and really also wanting to see what Ali could do. And you saw him out there in the kickoffs and you see some dynamism there and whatnot. But the truth of the matter is I'm not expecting a whole bunch of activations from Ali the rest of the way. Where are you on that?
Me neither. I think, you know, he did offer some juice on the returns, which was the only time that the Ravens were able to win the field position battle were on his two returns. I think he averaged 30 plus yards a return, if I'm not mistaken. Pretty solid from him, but it's been the Hill and Henry show all year. I think I have some of my quarrels and exactly how that distribution has played out. But there just isn't a place for Ali in the offense. And so if he's active only for special teams and Mitchell is inactive, I think that's, you know, that's why I agree. It was kind of a weird explanation from Harbaugh to just kind of say, oh, you know, we wanted, you know, Ali. What's more concerning, I can't remember if Mitchell was on the injury report. No. So, you know, he wasn't. So you shouldn't be concerned about an injury. Really, to me, there's no reason not to have him active, especially when you think about the dynamism he could provide on the kickoff return. I don't know if they're as comfortable with his hands, but, you know, as dynamic as Ali looked, we all know what Keaton Mitchell's able to do. And of course, then working Keaton Mitchell into the offense is, you know, should be a goal of this team by the playoffs, is to have him be some element of this offense, given what he was able to put up for them last year. And the fact that he's under contract next year, and, you know, they'd probably like to build in a next season with him in a bigger role as well.
Yeah. I mean, it's all that it's absolutely true. The one thing that came to mind for me is, he's taking 2 weeks off here, and he really is taking three off, but he did go to practice. So the earliest something could have occurred would be like Saturday. But is it possible that in the same way they had to do for Dobbins, they had to maybe go back into his knee for some sort of cleanup procedure that would have been arthroscopic, tidy things up a little bit, that might even have him back for the Giants game, and the Ravens don't want to say anything from an injury standpoint about it. So they haven't put it on the injury report because their final injury report came before he went back for some sort of procedure. And again, all speculation, guys. I don't know anything specific about this, but I would say that, you know, deactivating him for Ali is unusual. And the fact that it was done points to some other medical component to this, whether minor injury too small for the report or some follow-up arthroscopic procedure that might be fairly minor.
Yeah, my guess is it's one of a couple things. One being, you know, something minor, maybe illness. Who knows what could have popped up on Saturday? Very minor. If it's something that required a scope, I would be very, very surprised, because that would be very, very close to running afoul of league rules. I think the NFL would maybe look into that, because, you know, yeah, you can say, oh, this popped up on Saturday, but that would only be allowable if it really did pop up on Saturday, and he should have been added to the injury report if that was the case, and he was not. So if that was the case, I think the Ravens would actually could potentially be in a little trouble, which is why I'd be surprised if it was the case that something like that happened. And they were able to keep that under wraps and get away with it, because they, you know, simply put, if he had to have a knee scope Saturday morning, they are required to alter their injury report.
They're required to alter it on Saturday. Okay, that could be. So it wouldn't, even if he was after their last injury report, that's
if it was
point.
After the last injury report, if it is you know,
I'll
something
toss out
that
another
is
possibility.
Significant okay. enough for him to miss the game, he has to be at least they have to added him to it. There are a lot of times where you see a player is added to the injury report with an illness and they're mm-hmm. designated as questionable. And I believe it happened to Kenneth Walker the weekend after his birthday. I think his birthday was a Friday night. He got added to the injury report with an illness on Saturday. Wonder what Drunkest. That illness was. Yeah. And so you'll see that as a way for teams to basically comply with league rules and hedge on the fact, okay, we're pretty sure this guy's going to play, but it is possible that he doesn't, and if Kenneth Walker were to randomly not suit up, Seahawks would be in a lot of trouble. So that's why.
So another possibility, which would entirely suck, I mean just entirely suck, would be that there's something that Harbaugh has been upset by with Mitchell. That's hard to believe. I mean, Mitchell is a lifer for starters in the NFL. His father played in the NFL, and his father would give him a good talking to about how to comport himself around the team. But if he you know, complained to Harbaugh too loudly or too often about not getting carries or something, you know, it's possible. I don't think a player asking for more playing time should really bother Harbaugh, and I don't think it does. I think the kind of thing that bothers Harbaugh is if there's some reflexive negative outcome because of that, like they start dogging it in practice, and he says, well, you know, this isn't going to work. Obviously, this is not the way to go about getting more playing time. Is to practice like that, or be late for meetings, or to do whatever else. So hopefully it's not a clubhouse issue here, a teammate issue.
I would share your surprise if that was the case, not just because of his father, but just in, you know, even in just my brief interactions with Mitchell around training camp. You know, people who don't know, he was on the sidelines during training camp, you know, rehabbing his knee. So he wasn't working out. He was just out at practice. And so that gave you know, media members present a little bit more opportunity to just chat with him. And I would just be very, very surprised if that was the case, if, you know, he had, you know, publicly expressed this, or, you know, I guess not publicly, but in a way that beyond just him and Harbaugh expressed displeasure about his role and dogging at practice. That would just be very, very surprising, and I would be pretty shocked if that was the case.
Yeah, I would be too. But we've seen the surprising deactivations this year have been all bad news. So I wouldn't be a good, you know, journalist or analyst not to bring that up as a potential issue. But I really hope the chance is basically none on that.
It's also entirely possible that John Harbaugh was, for once, completely telling the truth and just said, we wanted to get Rasheed Ali out in the return game. It's also possible that that's the case, although I'd be kind of surprised at that too.
Yeah. Want to talk a little bit about the other scheme they had. Overplaying Henry is something we talked about in other episodes, so I won't get into that at all. But Henry has had a heavy workload even this year, maybe not by his own standards, but he's had a heavy workload by running back standards. And there is a question as to whether or not they're going to get him a day off here. They've got the bye week here. They're probably not going to have a week 18 bye week. Just looking at the schedule, it looks like they're probably going to need to win that game for some reason, whether it's seeding, potentially even to win the division, or just to be at the five spot instead of the six spot, say, to go have the opportunity to go play in Houston. A lot of reasons why they're probably going to need that game, and they're probably going to need Henry for it. Are you concerned at all about that?
Henry's durability for the rest of the season? No. That's just not I think that they've worked pretty hard to manage his workload so far this year. I mean, they've given him a sizable workload, but like you said, compared to his previous seasons, it's not as much. And you think about the amount that Hill has played, that has kept Henry off the field. I think Henry is, kind of earned the benefit of the doubt, I think, when it comes to his age and durability. I think coming into this season, it was perfectly fair to question. New team, Derrick Henry, what is this going to look like? Is he going to be able to keep it up? And the Ravens have kept a lid on his carries compared to his unbelievable workhorse years in Tennessee. And I think that's intentional, knowing that, you know, he is a bit older and, you know, maybe he doesn't need the rest, but everyone could use it. And so I'm not super worried about his durability going into the last stretch of the season. This is, you know, one of the reasons why having a late bye is so helpful, so that he gets this week off late in the season. And then, yeah, you are coming out and playing the Giants the following week, and, you know, Ravens fans know better than to take any, you know, losing opponent too lightly. But that being said, if you can build up a lead in that game, that is an opportunity for you to just start handing the ball off to Hill and ideally Keaton Mitchell against the Giants and get Henry just a little bit extra time off the field. But
That opportunity to reduce his snaps in game, as opposed to hoping that a full game comes along when this is the only one. This bye week
agreed.
Is the only opportunity. Yep.
Absolutely. And I think the Giants game is what they should be really targeting for that. Obviously, every game you're trying to build up enough of a lead so that you can, you know, take your running back out. But against the Giants, that should be doable.
Okay, a couple more things we need to hit on. We'll try and go quickly here. 1.53 heavies per play was a season low for the Ravens. So you mentioned earlier they didn't ramp up the Ricard snaps. They only had 26%. Andrews played 74%, likely 50%. They had a couple from OL6 and Jones came on the field for a couple of plays, which, by the way, is interesting that Cleveland wasn't their guy against this team, but it is what it is. It's only two plays. Lots to like about the game Andrews had. Likely had one very bad overthrow from Lamar that if the throw had been on target, he'd had a huge game statistically, or a very good one anyway. But the Ricard carry is a little bit surprising, you know, that they can't figure out a way to make Ricard their inline guy on some run plays or even some play action plays.
That was very strange to me too. There were so many times where I was looking at what the Eagles defense was putting out there and wondering to myself, why isn't Patrick Ricard on the field? And you said exactly what I was thinking, which is, you know, you lose those inline snaps from Kolar. Okay, yes, there were some snaps, handful of snaps when Ricard and Kolar were both in line. But really what you're losing is your ability to go into 12 and 13 with Kolar as a blocking tight end. Now, we know Ricard doesn't have the receiving ability of Kolar, who's been, you know, pretty opportunistic on his targets this year, made the most of them. But just like you said, he can be a pass blocker to help you double team, you know, Carter. Carter was double teamed all night, so then you're leaving your tackles alone on an island all night against some pretty good edge rushers.
Well, they didn't really do that, by the way.
Well, okay, I think, you know, they put you know, a lot of chips out there, but just in terms of having just a numbers advantage in blocking in the run game with Ricard. I was just very, very confused by that deployment. To me, it is another example of the team kind of not always staying true to their identity. They, you know, they establish an identity, but then one injury comes up and they kind of go away from it. And it was really mystifying to me, especially once Bateman also went down, why we didn't see a lot more snaps for Ricard just as a better player to have on the field.
Yeah. I mean, first of all, why not Ricard? Because there's so much below the season average in heavies. Heavies seem to be something they could have really used against the Eagles. 11 set and 26 chip blocks in this game. That's 0.95 eligible receivers per play. You get five eligible receivers per play. They spent almost one of those on a per play basis doing with having some sort of blocking assignment, whether it was set or chip. Healthy dose to help the edge rushers in this game. And you know, when you look at how bad the edge rushers were, I mean, they were beaten fairly regularly. Rosengarten less than Stanley, but Stanley a lot. It's unfortunate that happened in a game where they had so much help.
Yeah, I just want to clarify. I think when you say edge rushers, you mean offensive tackles.
I'm sorry, I do mean chipping on the edge rushers. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, and the offensive tackles were getting beat.
Yes.
Yes. Okay. I just want to clarify. Yeah, and I think you know that's the blocking strategy, right? You chip the edges, you double team Jalen Carter, was there, but then I felt like the route concepts were not there to pick just to properly take apart the kind of coverages that the Eagles throw at you. And I think again, especially with the lack of screens, I think that was just a huge issue against a team that likes to drop back, is the drop back and rush for throw screens. And that's something that Monken has actually been able to infuse into this offense this year. So another example of, you know, them finding success and finding an identity with something and then just kind of inexplicably not using it.
All right. Outstanding talking football with you, Nick, and always fun, whether it's camp or here, to have some time. Obviously some very heated discussion here. Not heated, I wouldn't call it, but you know, boisterous discussion about the Deontay Johnson situation, how that might get resolved for the Ravens. But appreciate having you on. Where can people find your work online or contact you directly on X or whatever other platforms you're on?
Yes. So I actually started as an associate editor and contributor for Baltimore Beatdown earlier this year, joining Kyle Barber over there. I still write battle plans for Russell Street Report, and I can be found on Twitter talking about football at Nick, N-I-K, Noseball.
All right. Outstanding. Appreciate having you on, Nick. Other folks out there, appreciate all the listenership. It's fantastic. Really, really appreciate the support. We're still trying to expand the show by word of mouth. So that older gentleman who doesn't listen to podcasts, perhaps show him how to play this directly off his computer is what I always say. Being a guy who doesn't really do a lot of podcast listening myself, I do, you know, a lot of YouTube videos, but not too much podcasting. I can really appreciate that as a 61-year-old. But please give us any support you can in that regard. If that's too much, a 5-star 50-word review is always appreciated, always on your favorite podcast platform. Nick, thanks again for joining us.
Thanks so much, Ken.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
New year, same great savings. All in the Kroger app.
Get Kroger Spiral Sliced Ham for 89 cents a pound with your card and an additional $25 purchase limit too. Then get large avocados or mangoes for 99 cents each with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.